Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is Simon Aitken. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Stuart.
You're very welcome. Now, just to give people, or the listener even, a brief introduction to yourself from my point of view. You and I have known each other a while. We've worked on a film or two, certainly 2012's Out of Hours, which was shot in my old workplace. You were the DLP on that film. And and you've now come here with a finished feature anthology called Modern Love, which people can watch on Amazon Prime if they're subscribers. Is there any other way people can watch it if they're not subscribers to Amazon Prime?
Unfortunately, it's only available at Amazon Prime at the moment. I am looking into getting like DVDs and stuff, but it's funny at the moment because with my previous feature, Blood and Roses, I was able to use Amazon to do DVD and be on Prime at the same time, but they are closing down their DVD department. So that option's kind of been closed off to me. Yeah.
That's interesting. Right. Well, for those people that are Amazon subscribers, do you want to give people a brief synopsis as to what Modern Love is all about?
Well, Modern Love is a set of 11 stories, all set in contemporary London. They delve into different aspects of love, good and bad, and it's all sort of a realistic look at things. It's not sort of your Hollywood kind of romance film. It's a lot more sort of down to earth than that.
Yes, it's while it does wear its heart on its sleeve, it certainly is somewhat cynical as well at the same time. I think it's safe to say that Love doesn't maybe always conquer all, is what I come away from watching your film. Although love is what we need at the same time, which is a kind of a bit of a shit. I put together the titles of what's on Modern Love, and I sort of tried to summarise what I thought each one was saying. Now, these are all quite abstract thoughts. They're not going to spoil if someone wants to watch it. But if I go down, so if I start with Taxi Ride, how do I tell someone I love them? Revenge for cheating. online, modern love is complicated. Digital romance, modern love is about finding your niche. Three words, I love you, dead hard. Silence, end of love. Unexpected, self-loathing. The one that got away, mistaken love. Hotel rendezvous, bad judgments all round. Music be the food of love. He does write a song. To the passerby, love is blind. Is that too literal?
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. To the passerby, the one thing I liked about that story, I mean, this was the story behind that story, is that I met Diana, the writer, when I was at a festival promoting Without Subtitles, or Sans Sutitra. And she wanted to make this short film called To the Passerby, and she asked me if I would be interested in doing it, and I was. And there was a plan to shoot it abroad, and it didn't come to fruition, but I asked her anyway if I could still use it. I still wanted to make it, and the thing for me for the what I liked about the story was that it wasn't that love is blind, but kind of like you can see somebody on the street and you can imagine what your life is going to be like with that person.
Okay.
But then you don't really know who that person is. So in the story, when she sees the other character,
yeah,
she envisions what her life would be with,
of course, yes,
him.
Yes. But
she doesn't really know him. And that was what intrigued me. And it was just the blind bit was was a nice little touch, because it, you know, it's a case of show, not tell.
Of course, no, and a lot of what you've done on all of these things, it plays with the idea of showing, not telling. But I guess, I guess that's more of an existential thing. It reminds me of, in fact, Richard Linklater, when he sat in the back of the taxi at the beginning of Slacker, and he talks about the girl he'd seen in the bus station. He's telling the taxi driver, and he says, "Well, you know, if I hadn't gotten this taxi, I could have gone and talked to her, and then we might have got on, we might have gone for drinks. I could have gone back to her apartment, I could have moved in." And he just pauses. He goes, "I should have stayed at the bus station." And it was really just an imagined version of falling in love. It was based on nothing that could possibly happen.
And that's the other thing as well, is because that wasn't her bus. If that was her bus, what would have happened? I mean, it's...
Well, I want to catch the 40. I want to catch the 42 to Possibility, to be honest with you. I think that's I think that's a great bus to get on, because the 42 around here just takes you to Homerton Hospital.
I mean, a lot of those little touches is down to the animator, Jason. I never asked him to put my face on the billboard.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I didn't like to ask. And we should say, that's Jason Finn, who's the yes. animator on that project. Now,
that's right.
This project, being available now on Amazon Prime as a feature film people can watch, is... Mm-hmm. It's testimony in many ways to an adage that I heard recently, which is patience and consistency will get you as far as talent and enthusiasm in the film business. You know, it's like the talent and enthusiasm is a given. That's why you want to do it. But it's patience and consistency which will keep you in the game, as it were, and keep people coming back to you and stuff. Because this has been a fairly sort of lengthy journey for you, hasn't it, in terms of where this begun and where it is now. Can you give people an insight into the origins of where this begun for you?
Yes, certainly. It started at a screening called Feast on Film.
Mm-hmm.
I was there with another film of mine, with the actor Benjamin Green, who's in Sansu Chicha. And we met an actress called Aurelie, who's in the film. And she was talking about the fact that there was no good roles for French actresses in England, you know.
Okay.
Which was kind of comical, because it's like, well, you know, I think there's a lot of good, you know, French roles in Paris, but
yeah.
In England, yeah. But I don't know, that conversation sparked something with me and Ben, and we started riffing on an idea about what it would be like to live, you know, and be in a relationship with somebody who speaks a different language.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben went away and he wrote the story, and then we went and made it at the end of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2012, we came back to Feast on Film and we showed the film there. And there was a lot of interest. I remember the Q&A afterwards, there was a lot of questions. And also we showed it at a few other festivals. We took it to Cannes that year, and I had it on an iPad and I would just show it to people around. And, you know, we were getting a lot of great feedback.
Right.
And so I decided I wanted to make another story, which was digital romance, and just sort of experiment with a different way of telling a story. So this time I made it a silent film, but being, you know, talking about relationships and stuff. And again, that one came out of a conversation with a costume designer I met over in Cannes.
Mm.
And she was dating somebody at the time online. And she was kind of worried that when she met them in real life, what would that, you know, what would happen? Would she freeze up? Because her up to that point, her conversations with the guy face to face had been all online. And so I sort of I thought that's kind of an interesting idea. And I went, okay, let's see what the outcome would be. And of course, we'd just done a negative outcome. So I thought, I'll make this one positive. And then it went from there. Once I had the two stories, I thought, well, there's more to this idea, this concept, and that I can explore. And I started just writing stories and filming them as I go.
Mm.
So it was great that I didn't have to, you know, have like three weeks to you know, film everything. I could film it weekends, weekdays, time I had off, and I could write the story, and I can, you know, and then I could edit them. So a few of the shorts actually were screened as short films up to a certain point. And then as it was getting closer to the feature being finished, I stopped showing them to people and saying, well, look, we're getting so close to having the feature finished. Or as I thought at the time, because the time just seemed to drag.
Mm. I understand. That's, but yes. That's the life of film, isn't it? Time drags.
Well, yes. And no, I mean, we had a bit of a holdback. So last year in March, the animation was very close to being finished.
Right.
As Jason Finn was doing a lot of it at the computer at his work, is in the office.
Mm.
And then we had the first lockdown.
Wow.
And that just, that put a stop to that. And it took quite a while. It took to the end of last year to actually get back to getting the animation done.
Got you. I should clarify Jason, that. I mean by time drifting, I mean in the film industry, like we allow time to pass where nothing happens. The idea that you're taking control and making use of the time you've got, keeping yourself moving forward, is almost like the opposite of what normally happens. If you're trying to make a feature film, for instance, there are so many variables involved that you can be waiting around for X, Y, and Z and never get yourself going, is what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, in the time of making this film, I have, tried to get other projects off the ground.
Mm.
And it usually comes down to, you know, finding somebody to fund the film.
Mm.
And that's usually the major hurdle you have to get over. I mean, I applied to the BFI microwave scheme.
Yeah.
And had no joy. And it's just like, you know, and it is, you are sitting around waiting for somebody to say, yes, we want to do this film, or no.
And obviously these films that become Modern Love, you were in full control of your destiny as much as you can be.
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, a lot of it was, the writing bit I did, and Anthony Maguire did, and Keith Iles gets a writing credit because all his dialogue is improvised. Mm-hmm. I came up with like the scenarios, but the actual telling of those stories, or you know what he says to the camera, Keith came up with all the words for that. And so it was just a lot of people giving their time, a lot of help from people, especially when it came to locations, and just, you know, it was a group effort. I mean, I couldn't have done this film without everybody who've worked on this.
That's a good segue, because obviously, it'd be remiss for me not to declare my interest in the film, in the sense of my kitchen was the setting for one. Do you want to talk about what it was you wanted and what you did with that space?
So with Silence, the story of the end of love, that was an idea that came from Antonia Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, you know, sometimes relationships don't go out with a bang, they go out with a fizzle. And so I thought, oh, that'd be interesting. And again, I went with it being one camera setup and the two actors sort of working throughout the space. And the thing I loved about that was that you could play. So normally on a film, especially on a low budget film, you don't have much time to experiment and try things out. You literally have to get, you know, the five shots, you know, wide shot, close up, over the shoulder, you know, all that kind of stuff. Usually you don't have time to sort of say, well, let's try this. Or maybe, you know, walk slower, maybe walk quicker. I mean, usually if you do another take, it's because you feel what they've done is wrong, it's not correct, or they could do better. Mm. But in this instance, we could actually, you know, try different things. You know, stand here, stand over there. It was really good as like an experiment. And just the whole idea is that, you know, that their actions speak louder than words. And just the words they do say at the end is kind of like a punchline to the story.
Yeah, I mean it's very much the sort of mise-en-scène, isn't it? In the and you know, with that sort of formalist cinema, in the sense of you've chosen your frame, yes, and then the actors have to occupy it with what they need to do. You're not using the camera to then tell us more. Everything's about what you've set up and then what happens within it, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean it's. It's a style that kind of informed Hotel Rendezvous, where, you know, bad mistakes all around.
Yeah. But equally, but interestingly, it's very. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it till you were describing what went into Silence. Is that there's great parallels between them because they're two other people in a long term relationship that's run its course, while having a, you know, reasonably long term relationship on the side. That neither have realized has run its course until actions, you know, bring it to a head. And that's lovely because then you can't, again, it doesn't need explaining, does it? It's not something you need to serve up and say, right, okay, oh, I'm dead angry at you, la, 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 la. And it's like the, what's the, in the Hotel Rendezvous one, what's the female character's name?
Aliska.
Aliska. So Aliska is just disappointed. It's so brilliant to be disappointed having made your big move to then be faced with disappointment. But then it's like, what's the expression? If you sleep with lions, don't get surprised if you get bitten, kind of thing. And it's like,
yes,
a cheater cheats, don't they, kind of thing. And it's interesting how people kid themselves, and that's none of that's necessarily said, but these are the thoughts you can come away with having watched the interaction.
Yeah. I mean, also with that story, I played with time a bit as well. So it's kind of like, so there's a flashback and then you go to what you think is present time. There's actually another flashback because it's that kind of loop. So you start off at the end and then you end at the end.
No, it's lovely. The way you bring us back into the present with the... with the segue between the door answering the door being the door being knocked on and then the door being answered, it was a neat trick. excuse me. Now you've shot a lot on location in and around London. We see a lot of London while you're in your film. So I'm guessing a lot of that was being a bit cute with guerrilla filmmaking. So do you want to talk about some of the challenges of shooting in a big city where usually you're going to have to. You're going to have to get certificates and permissions and stuff to be shooting a film. But obviously there's ways of shooting film that isn't as noticeable as three people stood around a tripod and a monitor screen. I mean,
that's the thing about if you put a tripod down somewhere, then you need a license to do it. You need a permit. And if you don't have the license down, if you've got the camera on your shoulder, unless you're on private land, you know, you could be moved on, but that's about it. I think now where we had problems was when we were shooting online, segments that join up the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And we shot that film about at least three times. And the problems we always had was that when you're filming in a city like London, they don't care that you're filming. They're going to carry on with their life.
Yeah.
So we actually filmed the segment after the date where he's talking to camera about how he felt about how it went and everything. Mm. And we we were actually in Leicester Square,
blimey,
the park area. And yeah,
that quite, I mean, for people that don't know Leicester Square, that's probably the least quiet place you could, and the most yeah. footfall, because it's literally a pedestrianised area. There isn't a road around it.
Yes. Yes. We were in one of the benches there, and it was, you know, it was getting close to throwing out time, and we were there right up to the last minute. Unfortunately, so was most of London, and we actually had a couple next to us having a big argument, and it was just like...
Very meta.
Yeah. 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 And it was just like, but you couldn't hear a word that Keith was saying. So,
that begs the question then. Why was it so important that you shot in Leicester Square?
Well, I always wanted London to be part of the story, mm-hmm. you know, to feature in it. And I thought, well, let's try Leicester Square. That's a good place to go.
Mm.
And, because we had filmed in Chinatown, sort of just round the back.
I noticed. Yeah, around back of Prince Charles.
That's it, yeah. And I thought it would make sense that if he was going to do it, he would do it, you know, nearby. And sort of Leicester Square is, you know, literally just there.
It is indeed.
So in my mind, it kind of made sense that way. But unfortunately, London had other ideas.
So how many retakes were you forced to do then with that one?
When he's walking down the street or when we were shooting Leicester Square?
When you were in the park in Leicester Square.
We did like five or six goes and all of them were unusable.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
You said at the top before, you know, if Keith's improvising as well, How are you keeping your continuity then? And how is he conscious of his continuity? How do you manage that aspect?
Well, as I say, there was an outline. So he had things that he had to talk about.
Got you.
So he knew what the date was and how it went and his sort of feelings about it. And any other sort of issues he had, he would, you know, he'd bring up. But this was a joy of working with Keith, was that he was very consistent with his improvisations.
Yeah.
So he would kind of pin it down in the first take, and then I might make a few adjustments, but he would always, every one, he would literally, it would be, you know, it would be like as if there was a written script. So he would go over the same kind of things. He might word it slightly differently, but yeah. There was always this consistency of him saying the same things.
I mean, if I'm honest, it was the one I learnt the most about in terms of, because obviously the others, I'd guess, I mean, Digital Romance, I suppose, as well. The others are about universal truths, which, you know, you can come prepared to understand, and it's a point of view you're presenting. But with online, I mean, I'm someone that's been together with someone since 97, so it well predates the idea of meeting someone using an app.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And yeah, and that brings me to your own performance within the film.
yes.
Can you? I recently interviewed Danny Houston about his film, The Last Photograph, and he stars in it too, so he's directing himself. Now, obviously, we're talking on a Zoom call now, and I'm guessing what you do in the film is show a two-way conversation between yourself and the character Keith's playing. How was it directing yourself and keeping a tab on your own performance as the director?
Well, it comes down to the when we shot online originally, because we shot the whole thing back in about 2013.
Okay.
And I wasn't satisfied with it, so I came back and we redid it and we added a few things. We made it originally it was like a video diary. And I was always sort of behind the camera, so every segment would start with me saying, "So Keith, how's it going?"
Yeah.
I was very much a part of that story. You wouldn't see me, but you could hear my voice.
I've got you.
And so we kind of had done it. We already had done like the first version was like a rehearsal. Mm-hmm. It was like a first go around. And so there was a segment where I was driving Keith to his date and he had the camera on me.
Yeah.
And so it was very interesting because I had to concentrate on driving.
often the case when you're driving, yes. Often the case.
Yeah. Nothing worse than, you know, having a crash.
Yeah, you need to retake that shot.
Yeah. So, we drove around Soho a lot. We did, like, multiple takes and stuff like that. And so when it came to that, it was that similar thing. It's like, well, okay, I'm here, I'm giving my friend some advice, and that's it. So I just, you know, listened to what he said, had to, you know. And, of course, I could see myself, so I knew if I was giving a bad performance or not, or, you know. I mean, I think most directors who go in front of the camera probably go, oh, yeah, not very good in this. But again, the Zoom call came out of necessity because we tried filming it various other different ways. We tried filming it in a beer garden, you know, two guys discussing this over a pint. We even filmed it in my back garden, Streatham, when I was living there. But it was always, you know, sound problems. You know, the day we decided to film in the back garden, the neighbors decided to have a big old party. So there was music blaring and barbecue going, and it was just like, well, we can't use the sounds.
But these are interesting anecdotes because for the filmmaker listening in, this is the reality, isn't it? Of you can get all the people you need to volunteer their time. But if you're doing anything outside, you're at the whim of what other people are doing outside without fencing off and soundproofing it.
Oh, yeah. especially if you're filming in a city centre, you know, it can bring up so many different things. God, years ago, I shot a TV pilot for a magic show called Trick or Street, and it was street magic. And so we would, you know, the people we would go up to, they weren't plants. They were just people on the street. And of course, in the middle of filming, anything can happen. We had like a homeless guy come up into the middle of one of our shots and, you know, interrupt us. But it was so funny and like off the moment, we kept it in.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that sort of unexpected thing that may happen when you're filming, because a lot of people I know in London, they see a camera, they don't,
no,
you know, they just carry on, you know, it's just part of life.
Well, look, I mean, it's always interesting when you bring somebody who's never been to London into the West End for the first time, and the first thing that they often say is all these people, like, they can't, whereas if you've done it before and it's not a surprise,
yeah,
it's just the West End. It's like seeing the buildings, seeing lots of people. But it genuinely, yes. I mean, for the people outside of London listening in, you know, to try and shoot any portion of a film in Leicester Square without security and cordoned off and telling everyone to shush is a task in itself. But you were going to say about choosing to use Zoom with the online one. So talk us through that again, sorry.
Yeah, so it was a case of getting me and Keith together and finding a location that was very different to everything we had shot before.
Mm-hmm.
As we had failed many times filming outside, it was getting late in the year, so it wasn't getting so warm, you know, winter was coming. And so I said, well, why don't we do it as like a Skype call? Skype had introduced recording actually onto their programming. And I thought, well, let's do that. Now, when I did Digital Romance, how I did that was I would film one of the actors, you know, on one side of the call, and then I would go to the location where the other actor was and film their reaction to watching what the other actor was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much using two cameras. And I thought, well, this time, why not? Let's actually just do it as a Skype call, split screen. And it worked out really well. I was very happy with it. And, you know, we recorded sound like we are for this podcast with like microphones and stuff like that. So I knew video quality wasn't going to be so important, but sound had to be.
Of course.
You know, because it is, sound is like 70% of the film. You can get away with a bad image, but you can't get away with bad sound.
You can. It's really weird how we do watch with our ears and we're not conscious of it.
Yeah.
Because it's the biggest thing to take. Poor sound quality is the first thing to take out of a film. I mean, we've watched enough films with poor practical effects where that's never a monster in a million years, but it doesn't stop us enjoying it. But if that monster sounded like it was being thrown in a bucket, we'd be like, oh, terrible monster, that, isn't it? Listen to it raw. Who recorded that?
But yeah, I mean, you can get away with a shot being slightly out of focus or being out of focus, but it's bad sound. Then
one of the interesting things, in addition to the examination of love, is your varying styles. I mean, we have straightforward, as you've described, you know, people talking to camera. You've got the idea of just a single frame. You play with time. But you also play with styles as well. You've got the one that got away is you know, very much an ode to Ligeti, isn't it? You know, the whole
That's
idea.
Correct, yes.
The still photography telling a moving image story. And then, and even to the point that, like Ligeti, you bring in a real moving image towards the end, which is almost still, but not quite. So enough that, you know, it's alive and it's a lovely little, I don't know, was that, I'm guessing that's an intentional homage to.
Yes. Yeah. When I was studying film on a very short course, I mean, I didn't do film school. I did a course called Panico, which was a crash course in filmmaking. It was literally like, this is a camera, this is a sound man, this is what a director does, this is what an editor do. And one of the examples they gave was Ligeti, the idea of using stills to tell a story. And I love that story, and I wanted to tell a story in a similar style. So very much a homage to that film. And I just thought it would be great at the end where, you know, after seeing everything that she's gone through, you know, she turns around to the camera and just to deliver that last line.
No, it was nice. But that varying style of delivery is a very interesting thing. I mean, because obviously this is an evolving project which didn't start out as this project, but you saw the opportunity to do it. So, how conscious were you of needing to mix it up as part of the overall presentation, rather than just do 7 or 8 Simon Aitken films that just look all like Simon Aitken films, if you want a better expression, because they are all your films, obviously, still. But
Well, that was the opportunity that was I could see. I mean, that was one of the things that kind of spurred me on to make it into a feature, was like, well, I can try different things. It doesn't have to be, each story doesn't have to be told the same way. I can try different things out. And that was one of the joys of making this film. Unexpected. But that film, I was influenced by Upstream Color, where it was very much about the imagery and less so more about the dialogue. If you watch that film, sometimes the, the dialogue takes very much a back seat to actually what's going on in the scene, image wise. I mean, there are certain bits that are, the dialogue's very important, but you could turn the sound off and still watch that film and kind of understand what it's about. I mean, it's very, I showed it to Antonia, my girlfriend, and she doesn't like it. She didn't get it. But I think it's more of an accessible film than, say, Primer is, which is very wordy and very technical and talks about things that are, seems like you need to have like a degree or something.
But in that one, like with the one that got away, you're reliant on music still though, aren't you? And obviously,
oh yes,
even more so with To the Passerby. They relied to me, which I saw Neil Myers, who's another connection back to Out of Hours, the little film we worked on. If we take Unexpected as the example, what was the process of getting the music for that one? How did you go about that, and what was your discussions with the person that provided it for you?
So each short story we would complete, so everything would be done, and so I would, once we were, the picture was locked, I would then go meet with Neil and we would talk about like themes we wanted in the story, ideas for kind of music, this kind of feel, any sort of examples that sprang to mind, and then Neil would go away and he would write the music to the picture, and then send me some examples, what I liked, what I didn't like, and it was a great working relationship, but it was always after the fact, was never before filming.
Okay, so that's interesting. So what do you feel is the benefit for after the fact compared to sharing the script and then saying, think of some music for that?
It was just a way of working because Neil, is a great composer and he's working a lot. I knew that his time was sort of finite.
Got you.
So I would bring him in, later rather than earlier. If I had a budget and lots of time, and then I could, and there was a lot of music that needed to be written for the film, I would then maybe approach Neil earlier than later.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's good. I mean, that speaks to the idea that it was about the circumstance, it was about time management. So that's an important thing people to understand, is that if you're relying on favours and resources that you aren't paying for, then you've got to make the best of them, not expect it to be like if you go out into the market with money. It doesn't work like that, does it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to be respectful of people's time. There's no money involved, and it's they still have to do the amount of work that they would be being paid for.
Mm.
So you have to sort of be very respectful. It's like with coming up the schedules for the shoot. A lot of the time I would have to schedule it around other people's diaries.
Mm.
And, if you were using one actor for one shot, then I would sort of schedule it so that either they would come in and we'd shoot them first, or they'd come in late and we'd shoot them last. I wouldn't do the thing where it's like, right, you have to be here at this time, and then you go wait all day till we get to you.
Yeah.
It's just being very respectful of, people's time and just understanding that they are doing me a favor, and just like, make sure that, that you can, they're not sort of giving things up, paid work to be there. And also when they do arrive, that you treat them really well. You make sure that they're fed, watered. They don't spend a penny on the film. So if travel expenses, or if they had, they decided, oh, I'll buy this t-shirt because I think it really works for the character, then they would get that money back.
Mm.
So it's just being respectful of everybody who's working on
this. No, that's sound advice, Sam. Now, just as one last question then, looking back on it, this is, as you say, without subtitles, is back in 2011. We're in 2021 now, so it's a decade's work. What are some of the lessons, what maybe a couple of lessons learned that you could have avoided knowing them beforehand that you could pass on to a filmmaker listening in? And what are the some of the sort of opportunities that you found that you think people should be looking for too? You know, maybe some you know, positive aspects of what you've gleaned from this experience.
I must admit that I didn't really have many sort of regrets on this one because I had time. It wasn't a case of...
Not so much regrets, but more like lesson things you've learned that you didn't know before you went into it. You know, what new things do you appreciate about the filmmaking process that you didn't 2011?
It's weird. It's weird when you ask somebody about their growth, and sometimes it's a big leap, but sometimes it's a small leap. I think when I made my first short after my first feature, I noticed a lot of differences.
Got you.
But I think after making the feature, I couldn't tell you, you know, what I would change and stuff like that.
Let me reflect back on you then, what I'm watching then. So for me, if somebody was to listen in, they might be going, oh my God, how does this all hang together? You know, he's been working on it over 10 years. It can't possibly. But one of the things watching it is that you wouldn't, even though I was aware going into it of the time you'd taken to pull this project together, when I watched it, it feels like a coherent anthology about the meaning of love in the 21st century. It didn't feel like, you know, a patchwork quilt of short films, which is often a mistake that anthologies make, is that, okay, I can't afford to wait around and or put time and effort into raising finance to make a feature. Therefore, I'll crib together short stories and make them, adapt them to screen and stuff. But this feels, because of the subject, because you've stayed so true to a subject matter, and like you said in the conversation, you've experimented with the form because you were free to do it. It was yours. That in itself sort of liberates the film from any sense of true uniformity, because the core theme of love that you stuck to is both a thorny and liberating thing in life that none of us can get around. And all your characters have got little myopic experiences of what love did to them, or what love is making them do, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, I think you just summed up really well, because it was that, you know, having that concept, having the idea that these stories all revolve around love, and sort of having it as kind of like a realistic view of love. None of these characters are going to walk off into the sunset. You know, they're all going to live lives after this, some good, some bad, some for the better, some for the worst. And so that, you know, when I was writing the stories or finding the stories for this anthology, that concept was always there. That was always the thing that was like checkmarking the script, saying, well, does this fall into this? And I also feel that having the online story sort of weaved into it, you know, was like the glue that kept all the stories together, instead of it being like, you know, short story.
Yeah.
And so having that, as I say, the idea and that checklist, I could then be free to sort of try different styles, experiment, and some cases play. And, you know, it was for me as a director, that was a great experience. And I don't think, sort of when you're making films, you don't really have that opportunity to do it, because you have like a finite amount of time to do it. We can't all be like Stanley Kubrick and have like, you know, a year to shoot
can
a
we
film
not?
And try
can we not,
something different. No, we can't.
Bloody hell. I better throw these NASA. I'm going to throw these NASA lenses out then. I'm not going to test them.
Unless, of course, you're, you know, very wealthy and prepared to put your own money into a project. Yeah. And, you know, people that are prepared to, you know, spend that amount of time with you making that.
Well, let me throw some hypotheticals at you, because this is just for my own entertainment. In Silence, the husband in the as reality's hitting him, all I kept thinking about was, I'd love to see what the conversation was like at work, because I'm betting he didn't tell anybody when he went to work on Monday morning. That's my bet with the husband in towns. And I've been racking my brains, and I can't work out what music John covers in his vlogs.
Oh,
If I was being harsh on Keith's character of John, I would say I've got an inkling it might be prog rock. That's my guess. He's doing his reviews of prog rock albums and going through his vinyl collection for us. That's my guess, because often we never know what his real video blog is, but he tells us he's got a music video blog. So that thought entertainment, obviously knowing Keith like I know yourself, it's fun. I must admit that was quite surreal for John Keith to speak to you. What was your character's name?
Paul.
Paul. So John and Paul are talking, and I'm watching Simon and Keith on a video call. That was quite surreal. But that's obviously a person. Not everyone's going to have that experience when they watch it, but it is quite surreal.
Well, that's it. I mean, sort of going back to your question about how it felt about being on camera. Well, I was just playing myself, so I didn't really have to act.
Well, look, let's remind people then, how and where can they see Modern Love?
They can see it on Amazon Prime. It's available in the UK and US. You can stream it, you can rent it, and you can buy it.
Well, look, just gives me to say thank you very much for giving us your time on the BritFlix podcast.
Thank you, Stuart.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.